Well, happy meeting, and welcome to the Monroe City Council meeting for May 1st, 2012. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Edie, if you would, roll call, please.
Councilperson Garing.
Here.
Cutterback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
President.
Davis. Gamble. Hanford.
Here.
Yes, let the record show that Mr. Gamble, or Councilmember Gamble, is not here. He is so sad to miss tonight's meeting. He's in Florida right now, I think, at one of the rides at University Studios. Okay, please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. We're going to switch the order here during our announcement presentation portion of the agenda. Our officer is not here just yet. And so we've got a presentation by members of WSDOT with regards to the SR523 rock cliff blasting schedule. And Janice, is it Feeney?
Yeah.
Yes, and Gil McNabb, I hear this evening from WSDOT. And welcome to the meeting and appreciate the information which you're going to share.
Thanks. Well, I'd like to thank Mayor Zimmerman and the Monroe City Council and the community for allowing us on your agenda tonight. So we're here to give a brief update on the SR-522 widening project between Snohomish River and the city of Monroe. We've got a busy summer coming up with lots of activities, so we thought it worth everybody's while to come and talk about what's going on this summer. My name's Gil McNabb. And I have Janice Fanning, who is actually the project manager for this project, who will give an update. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
I have a bit of a cold, so if I lose my voice, I have Gil as a backup with me. This season is our second season of a three-year construction project. We're on schedule to complete the project by the end of 2014. This is going to be our busiest construction season yet. You are going to, we're doing some pretty interesting work. We're going to do some rock blasting. We're working on four bridges. You will see daytime full closures for the rock blasting, as well as many nighttime closures for hauling the rock off our site and doing other work. We need people to get tuned in to all the closures that are coming up on 522. So I have a flyer that I've given Edie, and on that it has a project hotline number. We'd like people to program that into their phones so you can call. Also to bookmark our project website and construction updates so you know what closures are going on. I wanted to highlight the rock blasting work, which we're going to start in about mid-June. We need to remove 300,000 cubic yards of rock to widen the roadway. As you're headed towards the Snohomish River Bridge, just before you get there, you can see two rock outcroppings to the right. That's where we're going to work. There's kind of a bit of a gap in between the two rock outcrops, so that's going to be our construction entrance point. The contractor will be bringing in a rock crushing plant that they will operate during the day. Some of the rock will be used on the project to build the widening, which is what was done when the road was first built. We will close lanes at night to be hauling rock away. So when the contractor starts blasting in mid-June, we anticipate 2 to 3 closures a week from 10:15 a.m. to 11:15 a.m. during the day. We were able to have a test run a couple weeks ago, April 25th and 26th, as we removed some rock trees above the rocks. That went very well. The detour is US 2 and SR 9. It adds about 10 miles to the trip, about 20 minutes. The rock blasting work will take approximately a year. So we're going to be doing this work for a long time. We have already notified residents in the area of our plans to begin rock blasting. We've surveyed some homes and wells within the 1,000 feet distance from where we're doing the rock blasting work. We're having an open house right now at the high school. We had a pretty good turnout. I'd say we had about 50 people come. We'll still be there till 8 tonight. And what we anticipate people that are very close might hear is a rumbling when there's a blast. They may also hear horn sounds from the blaster. And we know this is really interesting work, but everybody needs to stay away from the rock blasting. Don't try and come watch. We're going to take videos. We're going to put them on our website so you can see them there. That's a safe thing to do. We will have the perimeter corded off and we'll watch it, but don't try and get close. The other thing I wanted to let you know about is we're continuing to work on building the new Snohomish River Bridge. Another one, so that we have the full 4-lane capacity. That work requires that we start building a temporary work trestle June 15th. So local residents may hear kind of a tink, tink, tink sound as we hammer during the day and into the early evening. I think that's all I've got. I've got to give it to you.
Is there more?
Excuse me.
Yeah, it looked like she just about covered her agenda. So as she was saying, we start building the temporary work trestle out in the river because there's one pier out in the river. And we have a very short time frame to do that. There's an environmental fish window from June till October 15th. And initially it was slated to be a 2-season job, but a contractor is very aggressive in trying to get it done in a single season because all the temporary trestle has to be removed. If we don't get it done this season, then potentially we're back in 2013 during that same fish window to build the temporary work trestle back and finish the pier work in the rivers. So a lot of incentive then to get that work done. And we don't anticipate the pile driving at night. So the noise at night should be minimal. However, during the longer days in the spring, or, well, in the summer months particularly, they'd be working daylight hours. So, you know, potentially till 9, 10 at night during the daylight in order to complete that. And so those are essentially the highlights. I don't know if there's any questions.
Councilmember Kedvick.
Thank you, Gil. Just a question about the closures. Janice stated that there'd be 2 or 3 a week starting in mid-June.
Yes.
And is that for the whole year that you're blasting?
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. And a lot will depend on how the rock behaves as they're blasting and removing it. So right now it's anticipated that they'd be roughly 3 blasts per week. And that blast actually takes place in the very first 5 to 10 minutes of the closure. And then the rest of it is really for clearance to reopen the roadway. If there's any debris, we don't really anticipate that, but they have to basically do a thorough check. And then the other kind of key thing is to make sure that the rock face is stable. They have to do any scaling, for instance, before we can open up the roadway. Scaling meaning remove any loose rock that might be a threat to the highway. And so actually most of that then hour for the closure is really for safety precautions to clear the road and assess the rock.
And so when people sign up for the email updates, because I see you have that on here, will you know on a weekly basis of what nights you're closing, or is that more of a...
Yeah, and I would really encourage the use of the hotline, because there'll be updated outgoing messages on that project hotline, and then also a chance to leave a message or ask a question if needed, and then the website will also be kept up to date with all the latest information on the project and the closures.
And you guys have like a mobile app?
Yes, there is. Yeah, okay. Mobile app. So that would have essentially the same information that the
right.
website has.
And that might be easier for some people. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
We'll be posting the contact information and links on our website as well for citizens in Monroe, too.
Great. Yeah, all the outreach we can get.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you coming out and giving us that update, and look forward to completion of the project and the funding between.
Great. Thank you very much.
Have a great evening. Thank you for coming out.
Can you read the letter?
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, yeah. We're going to move on a little bit here and move into comments from citizens, and then if our officer shows up, we'll break in on that portion to have the presentation from our chief. But for now, this portion is set aside for citizens to speak to the city council on any issue, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public meeting. Is he here now? No, he's here. Okay, and we'll move on to the
guest of honor.
The guest of honor is here. Okay, then we'll step back here and Chief.
This one usually isn't very loud, so. Okay, I'd like to recognize the service of K-9 Taylor as she retired on April 1st after 9 years of service with the Monroe Police Department. Taylor's a Yellow Labrador Retriever, joined our service in March of 2003 and was assigned to partners with Steve Plopp through 2006 and then assigned to Jay Tolbert in 2007. The service together brought a multitude of extensive narcotics finds and search warrants, seizing drugs based solely upon canine alerts by Taylor. Her entire 9 years of service have been nothing but excellent. However, I'd like to highlight a couple of the more prominent cases that she had been involved in. And those of you who were in the council back in 2003, probably none of you, perhaps mayor, you were. I assured you that the purchase of these dogs would be paid for over and over and over again. And I'll just give you a couple examples of here what Taylor's done in her very storied career. In December 2003, Sergeant Steve Klopp and Taylor were called to the Monroe Fred Meyer to assist U.S. Customs with a large conspiracy case. The case resulted in the seizure of over 200 pounds of marijuana with a street value of over $600,000. In 2005, Sergeant Steve Klopp and Taylor assisted Immigration and Customs Enforcement with two large international drug cartel cases. In February, they were called to the Monroe Shopping Center to assist U.S. Customs with a large conspiracy case. The case resulted in the seizure of 149 kilos of cocaine in a transport vehicle. The cocaine had a street value of over $5.8 million. In October, this team also again assisted ICE with a canine sniff of another transport vehicle. This one was an I-5. It assisted also the State Patrol made a stop on this particular vehicle, where a very advanced false compartment was found in this vehicle. Inside the false compartment was almost $700,000 in U.S. currency, which was seized by ICE's drug proceeds. Our agency and the community have benefited greatly from Taylor's efforts with her handlers, and we will miss K-9 Taylor and her true professionalism and drive. We have a plaque that we would like to present to her handler and Taylor. It says, April 2012, in recognition of our friend and partner, Taylor, Monroe Police Department K-9, 9 years of dedicated service, 2003 to 2012, retired. So. I think the SWAT team has a presentation on the commission holder.
Monroe Police Special Emergency Response Team has kind of a tradition when we send off its members. Each member of the SWAT team leaves with three particular items. And since the bulk of our deployments since 2003 have originated through search warrants that always start off the same, K-9 Taylor's nose sniffed out drugs, yada, yada, yada. We now have a search warrant to kick in the door of a drug house. We thought it was appropriate to send Taylor off in the same fashion as we would a CERT member. So we have not only a letter of recognition from the CERT team, but we also have our team photograph, as well as the same other two items that we send each team member off with, a tactical knife and flashlight engraved with K-9 Taylor's name on it, with its current handle.
These dogs are imperative to what we do. One of the things that we get on a regular basis is officer safety bulletins that talk about how drug dealers booby trap where they hide their drugs, either in the house or vehicle. And, you know, these dogs are not cannon fodder. They're not expendable. But we can all agree that we'd much rather attend a canine's funeral than an officer's. And so we're very thankful for what this dog and her handler do. In the military, they have a tradition for canine handlers that the canine is one rank higher than the handler. So that even if the general himself takes the leash, that general has to show that dog respect. So tonight, this is our way of showing Taylor some respect, and as well as thank her handler for doing what he does.
Thanks.
Taylor had anything that she'd like to say?
Just one more.
She's gained a few pounds since she's been off the road during the last few months.
That happens with retirement.
Yeah, I want to thank you guys for the support that you guys have given us. We've got a new dog. It's a black lab named K-9 Jet. You guys will meet her next week. So if he's half as good as Taylor, we're doing all right. Thanks.
Okay then, we will now move on to a portion of our agenda for comments from citizens to City Council. I will speak to City Council on any issue except the dog and division matter subject to our public hearing. Please address or please limit your time to 5 minutes if you would. And I would also ask to have you or members of the audience provide your name and address for the record. Tonight's agenda has some agenda items that I can imagine may be very personal or people are very passionate about, but I would like to ask that the audience refrain from any interruptions for those who are speaking. So no cheers, no boos, or anything else that might interfere with the comments to City Council. This will be the only warning that we have tonight, and if there are any outbreaks, we will have chambers cleared. With that said, I'd like to start with the first individual who signed up this evening, and that's Michael Terry.
I'm commenting on new business number 2, not in general.
You're welcome to do that at this time.
Are we addressing new business two at this time?
No, we're not having...
You can address whatever you want.
At this time, this is public comment, and you can address any item that you would like at this time.
Is there going to be a presentation on new business two?
There will be a presentation this evening, but there's no public hearing this evening. So this is your opportunity to address new business item number two.
That's not why I came. If there's not going to be a presentation and an opportunity to speak about it, I don't need to speak.
Well, there is going to be a presentation, sir.
The agenda says new business two, and you're going to go through the attachments.
Correct.
I wish to speak after that.
That would not be the time to speak. The time to speak is now.
So.
Let's see if he comes back. All right. Mr. Brett Olson.
Thank you, members of the council and Mr. Mayor. My name is Brett Olson. I reside at 111 Lake Avenue West, Kirkland, Washington. I am here speaking on behalf of the applicant for the Eastman Row Economic Development Group, which is, I believe, action item number two. I'm reading a letter on behalf of Joshua Freed, who's the deputy mayor of Bothell, and he is attending council this evening in another city, so couldn't read this himself. So here I am, following the wonderful presentation of the canine. Mr. Mayor and members of the council, I serve on the Bothell City Council. Our meetings are also on Tuesday, so I am unable to join you tonight, but appreciate your willingness to have my representative read this statement. I speak on behalf of East Monroe Economic Development Group. We want to urge your support for the comprehensive plan amendment and the accompanying rezone for the Highway 2 property in East Monroe. We believe the property is an excellent location for commercial development, and we believe we can bring much-needed economic stimulus to the city of Monroe by developing this site. Successful commercial development does many things for a city. It benefits the residents of Monroe by providing much-needed jobs. Furthermore, the presence of desirable retailers will keep Monroe dollars local instead of sending people to other cities to shop. Of course, local shoppers benefit city government by providing sales tax revenue during these tough economic times. The exact revenue numbers for the city will depend upon which tenants eventually come to the developed property. But as an example, I have been involved in a development in another city where the revenues could approach $6.5 million in sales tax on construction-related work over 3 years, $2 million in city application, review, inspection, building permits, and GFC charges over the 2 years, $1.5 million per year in additional annual property tax revenue upon completion, $2 million per year in new retail sales tax revenue, 300 new full and part-time jobs, $15 million in annual wages to the employment market. Of course, any development will inevitably bring some naysayers. In this case, we have heard the objections raised by a few of the neighbors overlooking the site. While we understand their desire to keep their view untouched, it is profoundly unreasonable to expect the property owners should not be allowed to develop their own property to its best and most logical use because a neighbor wants to retain their view. Let me take a few moments to briefly address the issues that have been raised. Sensitive areas. While there are some sensitive areas on the subject property, they simply are not legitimate reasons to deny approval. Here's why. Some of the neighbors have expressed concern about building on or developing steep slopes. The fact is that almost all the steep slopes near the site are on the neighbor's land. Someone else has built on steep slopes, not us. We have no plans to develop on or near steep slopes. In fact, most of these steep slopes are separated from any developable land by hundreds of feet of buffers. Wetlands. Most of the wetlands on the site have already been identified and buffers have been established. We have state laws and Monroe City codes in place that will protect those sensitive areas. In fact, these areas have already been exempted from the proposal. no wetlands are in danger of being paved over. Seasonal flooding. There are a couple of low-lying areas on the end of one of the parcels. These areas have flooded during major events, but there are very simple ways to address that issue. The Army Corps of Engineers has a process that allows safe development to occur while still maintaining sufficient space on site to store floodwaters during major events. This is manageable. This is a manageable problem and should not prevent approval of our request. Access from Highway 2. Ingress and egress from this property is governed by the State Department of Transportation. Of course, there is no way to know exactly what DOT will require until they see a specific project proposal. However, here are two important things to remember as it relates to the access issue. This is a major state highway. There are always access issues to address. This is not unusual. Traffic mitigation of some kind is to be expected. Any and all traffic mitigation will be the responsibility of the developer. The city will have no financial burden or responsibility. DOT will determine the requirement, and the developer will make the necessary changes. Finally, I understand the staff has encountered some minor problems regarding elements of the comprehensive plan. As someone who presently serves on the Bothell City Council, I am familiar with the need to occasionally tweak the comp plan. I am pleased to see that staff has already acted to address those inaccurate or obsolete elements. This is a good time to make those changes. Any city council will find itself facing such issues from time to time. Cities grow, needs change. This is a necessary and normal part of the job when you serve in your position. It certainly is no reason to delay or deny this proposal. Let me close by saying we believe development of this site can be of great benefit to the people of Monroe. Smart, successful commercial development brings vitality to a region. It brings jobs to the people and revenue to the city. Monroe needs both. Please vote to approve this application. Sincerely, Joshua Freeman.
Thank you. Chad? Kim?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Got it this week.
What's that?
You got it right this week.
Oh, very good.
Good job.
I knew it last week, so that's why I was wincing there again.
Chad McCammon, and I'm at 21624 Calhoun Road. And I just want to comment on a couple items regarding the comp plan changes and the East Monroe development. The number one issue would be that comp plan changes, I feel, are brought on very hastily without a lot of chance for any of the public to have reviewed any of the writing and to provide any comment on it. And by providing a first reading of that document, it's leading people to believe that this is the route that you're going to take it without listening to what comments that the public might have to make on the subject. And that's the whole reason 2 weeks ago that the Planning Commission could not come to any decision on this, is because they felt the same way, that they were being challenged to try to make decisions very hastily on a document that they had not had time to really think about and review and take comment from other people in the community about. So. That was the first thing I wanted to talk about. And then the other thing is that's written in there is about this gateway. But if the property at East Monroe is rezoned commercial, there's nothing holding them to any gateway at all. They're just going to receive a commercial zoning. They can kind of build whatever they would want that would meet what general commercial is described as. And right now, Wallace Properties is advertising that for sale as a possible rezone to general commercial, and they advertise things like strip mall use, gas stations. That's right on the website. So I don't know if the intentions are to really make it be a beautiful gateway as we've all envisioned in this. The next thing I'd like to talk about is there's other comp plan issues that East Monroe property would still not agree with, and that is that commercial developments are kept away from residential neighborhoods. You know, there's at least 40 homes that butt up against that property. They abut the property, residential to commercial. I'm one of them that they would but right up against my property. Our lines would touch. There's also verbiage in there about maintaining quiet environments in residential neighborhoods, and noise would be generated by any kind of commercial use. It could be noises that would go through the night as trucks roll in to make deliveries, and sound carries up a hill. And would, right now, all I hear is frogs at night. I hear a car occasionally, and I hear frogs. There's also maintaining other things in the comp plan are to maintain dark night skies. Right now, the only lights I see from my house are on the highway. You know, we have nice dark skies there. It's not like some of the other zones in town, like over by the jail, that the whole night sky is lit up all night long. You can't see stars in that neighborhood. You can in mine. I'd like to keep it that way. The other thing that I see is if these comp plan changes are made, it's almost like you've also decided that you're going to approve the rezone of the East Monroe property. That, you know, it's pretty much almost written right verbatim in the comp plan that decision's made as well. And I think that more discussion needs to be had there. I know that property does not resist in the adopted floodplain, but there's been two. The 99 is the adopted floodplain maps, but in 2005 and in 2010, new maps have been developed which do show it in the 100-year floodplain. They just have not been adopted yet, and it's due to some other issues with dikes, etc., but not. There hasn't been any appeals on this property about dikes, and it's connected by two large culverts at both the east and the west end of the property that will allow water to go through. And the majority of the property is under the flood level. So, you know, I see that us going ahead with changing that to commercial use really sets us up for a huge disaster on that property as it's developed commercially. You know, we could look like Chehalis did 3 or 4 years ago with the brand new Walmart and Lowe's, you know, 5 or 6 feet underwater. And I don't think we want that to happen. But those are some of the concerns I wanted to bring up. And I really appreciate everybody giving me the chance to speak and listen, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Doug Hamar?
Doug Hamar, I live at 21122 Calvin Road. Thank y'all for hearing me out. I apologize for just reading this, but I didn't really have time to rehearse it, and I don't want to be meandering all over the place. I'm all in favor of the gateway concept, urban village, revitalizing Monroe's downtown core while striving to maintain Monroe's small town feel. These are all admirable goals, and ones I believe we'll all share. Which leaves me completely mystified how a proposal to add a new commercial zone a mile down the road has any legs at all, when it would only serve to make reaching those goals harder to achieve by pulling customers and services, specifically an already stretched Monroe police force, away from the downtown core and making small town Monroe look like the typical urban sprawl. Have you wandered around Monroe lately and checked out the current retail environment? Every retail area, large and small, is pockmarked with and sometimes dominated by empty storefronts. I'd really like to hear somebody approach the owners and occupants of those existing retail concerns and explain how an additional retail zone a mile down the road is going to benefit their economies. Mr. Sachs in the Planning Commission workshop the other night stated that these decisions are always political. That may be, but it shouldn't be. They ought to be based on evidence. I have not seen one scrap, zero, zip, evidence that corroborates the assertions made by the applicant that this rezone is either needed or justified. While there's plenty of evidence on record supporting the opposite view, for the three members of the Planning Commission that voted in the affirmative for the change, it basically came down to a property rights issue. The owner has been trying to get this done for years. They invested in this property, and by God, they ought to be able to do with it as they please. Now, to me, that seems an odd tack for a Planning Commission to take. Wouldn't every property owner like to have that deference? one planning commission member went so far as to say it would be un-American not to allow this reason. I suppose you could argue that forcing the community to bail out private investors when they make poor investment decisions has become the American way. But is that a good thing? Now it looks to me like the city is attempting to write that deference to a particular property owner into the comprehensive plan. One, by writing the comp plan to suit this particular development, and two, even redefining the zoning designation of limited open space. This is from the proposed plan. It says, this designation, with the support of the landowner, is appropriate for the land that, and it goes on, blah, 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 too. Where is the precedent for the property owner approving of the land use designation? I mean, that kind of eliminates the need for city planning or zoning ordinances. And is that the precedent you want to set? I mean, I'm sure every property owner out there would like to be asked to approve of the zoning. My neighbors, had to go through a million hoops to build their house where they did and how they did it. They would have loved to have passed that up. But anyway, with that said, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all that I have who have signed up this evening, but as always, I'd like to open up to the members of the chamber audience who would like to address council at this time. You may do so by approaching the podium, providing with your name and address, if you would, for the record.
Hi, my name is Meredith Meckling, and I live at 13624 Chain Lake Road, Hinman Row. And I'm going to keep my comments really brief, but when I heard someone say that, someone on the Planning Commission said that it comes down to a matter of property rights, it just really pushes my button, because these people, when they bought the property back in 1970, whatever it was, they knew what the zoning was when they bought it. And I just, you know, don't understand why suddenly now they have to claim property rights because they want to make money on that property. Another thing I'd like to just point out is that I just hope that you will really take to heart the requirements of the Growth Management Act, which calls for early and continuous public participation in the development of comprehensive plan amendments or development regulations. I haven't been following this whole thing very closely lately because of a number of different reasons, but I do get the impression that at least the property owners feel like they did not get adequate notice that this is going to be happening tonight. And I think it's always better to err on the side of giving much more notice than is required than to go with just the legal requirements. So anyway, I really like that part of the GMA about early and continuous public participation. So I hope you can really take that to heart. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Evening, Jeff Rasmussen, 16655 150 Street Southeast, right here in Monroe. Again, I just want to join you and say thank you for hearing me out. The conversations we've had have been great. Perspectives going both ways, exactly what we need. In regards to the proposed cable park, but you know, I keep having conversations with people throughout the town, and you know, the first thing I hear is the cable park, great idea, and usually they're very surprised when I say I agree, we should have one in Monroe, but then it's quickly to say, you know, but why not somewhere else, you know, why not other places in Monroe, why does it have to be Lake Tai? Consider the uses that Lake Tai already offers and the potential that it can, that it'll continue to have. And with the spaces that we have in Monroe, and it doesn't take that big a space for an effective cable park. I've seen them in the videos, the friends, the family that are avid wakeboarders I've talked to, and you know, they agree. It doesn't take that big a space. It doesn't take that big a hole. And, you know, we got the space for it. We just got to find, we just got to work with the proposing company to make sure it's a good fit. And really, that, again, that's what I'm up here asking, is just let's look at other options. You know, Lake Ty is great as it is, and it's going to continue to grow with the events that we currently, that we are bringing into Monroe. The two different triathletes, triathlons, even the two wakeboarding competitions are great to have there. But we don't need the permanent structures of the wake towers in there. You know, let's put those elsewhere and spread the business wealth throughout the city. You know, let's get people into the city and throughout, and spend their money throughout the city, not just here or not just there. Let's find another option for this cable park. Again, it's a great idea, just not Lake Ty. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Chef.
Thanks, Chef.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you to those who spoke this evening. Appreciate your input, Council. And appreciate the manner in which you did. We will now move on to the consent agenda. And I guess I'd entertain a motion. Councilor Williams.
Let's pull number four.
Okay. Any other items you pull? No, then I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda, items 1, 2, and 3.
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Cutterback, seconded by Councilmember Camp to approve the consent agenda, items 1, 2, and 3. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Councilmember Williams.
Brad, I just have a question about this. As member serves, we wanted to get some more information before we decided on the final approach for East Fremont Street, and that's kind of what this step is. Isn't doing that
correct?
What is the deliverable of this project? What are we hoping to get out of that?
There's two ways to go. One is if you're happy with the estimate of $145,000, we'll have the property. The other one is if you want to find out what it actually, you know, the actual dollars, we'll actually have offer agreements with the property owners that then you could approve to continue on with the project.
So this will allow us to have more peace of mind on what the actual property acquisition
right.
is.
Basically, this company will go out and negotiate with the property owners for, we make an offer, they give us an answer, you know, counter offer back and forth, come up with real prices.
Okay.
And then
once we have that information, then we will get to a final decision on which option
right.
of the three to
yeah.
do.
Yeah, never mind, we don't want to buy any of the property, or yep, let's go with option C and buy the property for the full build out.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Go on.
That was my question.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda item 4?
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Williams, seconded by Councilmember Cutterback to approve the consent agenda item number 4. Seeing no other lights, we'll take a vote at this time. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, moving on to new business. And first item on new business today is an ordinance amending MMC Chapter 8.04, Animal Control. This is the first reading. Chief Quinzer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In 2009, changes were made to the Animal Control Ordinance, including revising licensing fees. Since those revisions, it was discovered that a more effective way for licensing requirements to have is to have each animal be licensed annually from the date their license was first obtained. This proposal and this ordinance also includes clarifying language regarding quarantining dangerous dogs to include biting another animal. I request that the motion to accept as the first reading of the ordinance be made.
Okay. recommended action is a motion to accept as first reading an ordinance of the City of Monroe amending Monroe Municipal Code 8.04 Animal Control, clarifying licensing standards and amending quarantine standards for animals. Councilmember Gearing?
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Williams. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Chief, how do they get, notice in the mail saying that the license needs to be renewed? Is it?
Yes. Okay. Yes, they do, but also it was at the first of the year every year, and it became far more reasonable rather than somebody coming in, and we didn't have a provision for prorating it. Mm-hmm. And it also, you know, we have to be figuring how much the prorate would be if they came in, say, in October and licensed their pet. So we changed it this way. We would still send out the announcement letting them know when their license was up.
Is this something they're going to be able to do online?
I don't believe so at this time because I believe they have to show a rabies vaccination annually.
So they have to show that in. Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you, Chief. Two questions. I didn't see anywhere in here where it says anything about pit bulls. I'm just curious what the city's stance is on pit bulls.
Pit bulls, if they become dangerous animals that are considered just as any other dangerous dog. Yes.
Okay, so there's no separate category. I know some cities.
No.
Okay. Okay.
We talked through this about 2 years ago.
Okay. Second question. I had a neighbor who got bit by their neighbor's dog. And so I'm just for clarification. So it looks like the biting dog then is set aside for 10 days in quarantine. What's the policy? Maybe I'm just missing it, but what's the policy once that happens? If he reoffends, or what's the punishment?
If they bought another, if they bit an individual, then I believe it moves into the dangerous dog portion, and there's certain requirements they have to keep up, and because it is classified as a dangerous dog, and if it bites again, then it moves to a different level.
So what we're looking at tonight isn't changing necessarily.
No, it's not changing that. What it's changing is if a dog bites another dog, and all we're asking for is a quarantine at that time, so that we can determine the nature. There's not an illness involved in it.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. And just to provide a little bit more background, there was a very large discussion a couple years ago with regards to breeds, and we came to the conclusion that the onus really needs to be on the owner to control their dogs. That's the way that you can best. There are very sweet pit bulls out there that roll over and create the kids. It's just the bottom line. So the environment, and it's really not the dog's fault. Let's put the onus and penalties on the owner for controlling their dog, and that's where we landed a couple years ago. So that's why you won't see specific breed language in there. Yeah. A healthy discussion, I'd say.
Thank you.
I had a neighbor at Pomeranian, and they used to chase me around the car. Dangerous dog, I'd say. All right, any further questions for Chief this evening? Okay, we do have a motion on the floor. We'll go ahead and take a vote at this time. However, first I will have the city attorney read the official title of the ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. An ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, amending Chapter 8.04 MMC Animal Control, clarifying certain standards for the licensure of animals within the city, amending the standards for the mandatory quarantine of biting dogs, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
We will take a vote at this time then. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? business, item number two, ordinance adopting comprehensive plan amendments. This is the first reading, and we start with Mr. Beilberg. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. We came to you last week with the introductory review of the this year's comprehensive plan changes. This is the first reading of an ordinance adopting those plan changes. We've set it up this way, as required by state law, that all our comprehensive plan amendments for the year are considered together. So rather than doing three separate ordinances, we did them all together so that we can show that we've considered all these changes to the comprehensive plan together. We're doing the first reading this week to get direction from the council. We will then be sending this off to the state for the state review of comprehensive plan changes. There's a mandatory 60-day review that takes place, and so that'll be coming back to you again after that state review in July. And if you have any questions regarding the individual amendments, Manager Popelka can take the First Airfield and North Kelsey downtown, and Manager Sachs is here to answer any questions about the East Monroe.
Councilmember Cutback. Councilmember Gearing.
I'm sorry, I'm turn mine off.
If it would be okay with council, if you guys could discuss First Air separately and first, and I can recuse myself again because my employer owns property in the airport overlay, and I feel I should recuse myself.
As you've done in the past, appreciate that. We will begin with First Airfield at this time. And let the record show that Councilmember Cutback has left the chambers. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. I also again want to disclose that I live in the airport overlay, and I've disclosed that on previous meetings as well. I have a financial interest in the property, though.
Councilmember Hanford as well.
That's great.
Councilmember Davis as well.
As well.
Okay. Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. Paula Brad, whoever we're discussing. As we looked at this one, there was some discussion last time with regard to whether or not we actually need to expand the overlay zone should this move forward. It certainly beyond my preference that we leave it as it is, even if we're going to move forward here. I'm just trying to look through here, and would a change need to be made to make that designation to indicate that in here, or was it listed someone here that I didn't see that that we wouldn't be moving the actual overlay zone if we're moving forward this? It would just stay the way that it is.
Mr. Councilmember Gearing, so the question tonight is, or the statement is, that you would not like to see the overlay.
I'd like to like it to stay just as it is.
Stay the same.
Exactly.
What must we do tonight, or
do we need to do anything tonight with regard to that? Brad's saying no. I didn't think I read it in here, but I just wanted to make sure.
So I guess the question too, with regards to that, is that I'll let Paul, if you would, you can reply to the question. I've got Paul.
Okay. I want you to know that I do have images of First Air and East Monroe available if they're needed. But in regarding your question about the overlay zones, that really is not related to the comprehensive plan amendment. It's more related to the zoning and the subsequent or potential expansion of the runway. And those zones were set up on the basis of Washington State guidelines, and the city customized them to fit our situation, and they are guidelines, they're not mandated. The city has established the mandates by the zones that were established, but there's nothing to say that they have to change. But they are related to the zoning and not the
common. So, for a discussion, that I'm not talking about tonight, and I appreciate that clarification. Thank you.
So, I guess with your answer there, City Attorney Lowe. We have a council member who has recused herself because of the expansion of the overlay. If that's where the direction that we're heading, then is there the need for a continued recusal?
Well, Councilor, I do apologize first. I was in a caucus with the city administrator, so I missed the staff's comments.
But to answer your question, I believe I explained at the previous meeting, there really is no issue here under state law. This is a purely legislative issue that would not require refusal under the appearance-parents doctrine, because the doctrine doesn't apply in these circumstances, and it applies to quasi-judicial matters. To the extent that there would ever be any arguable concern whatsoever, it's as a result of some language in the city's ethics ordinance that's potentially capable of a very extreme interpretation. My understanding is that Councilmember Cutaback has voluntarily recused herself out of an abundance of caution, not necessarily that she has to do that. But to answer your question, if the council's legislative proposal here is to shrink the area in question such that whatever marginal tangential interest Councilmember Cutaback's company or employer may have in it no longer exists for purposes of the proposal, there's no need whatsoever for her to be absent from the discussion.
We're not looking to shrink. The possibility is that it will expand, and I think that was the issue there, is that the expansion of the overlay would put the employer into a new zone. But if we're not expanding, or I'm just hypothetically, if council chooses not to expand, then you know it would be great to have Councilor Cutaback as part of the conversation and dialogue. Mr. Butler?
Currently, the overlay zone in the current 1860 of the Monroe Municipal Code is based on the end of the runway, so many feet from the end of the runway. The runway can be expanded as it is currently, as in the current comprehensive plan and land use designation. It's allowed in the current existing. So by changing the land use designation from limited open space to limited open space airport, does not change what can happen to the airport compatibility overlays. So anything we're doing does not change they getting bigger or getting smaller.
At some point there will be discussion.
At some point.
But that's not at all at any time during this process.
No.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. Paul, if I understand this correctly, it looks like as far as the airport goes, there's only two changes in the comp plan. One is the definition of the limited open space airport, and then the other was something to the effect of that we'll use the best practices, and I think there was something struck. Is there anything that I'm missing from that, or is that the only two changes we're talking about tonight for the airport?
Those are the only two changes. The second was to delete specific reference to the Washington State guidelines and preserve the use of best practices, whatever they may be, but for best practices. Those are the only two references to the first one.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any further questions with regards to First Air? Councilmember Gearing, real quick.
We're going to take it. Don't take action.
Okay. We have this as one single unit, so Councilmember Cutaback has recused herself from the discussion at this point. If First Air is to be included into the motion as recommended here today, it would lead me to believe that she would want to recuse herself from taking action to accept as first reading.
Sure.
So would it be appropriate to accept as first reading the portion of the ordinance related to First Airfield?
What the motion would then be, Council, would be to approve first reading of this ordinance without the reference to the First Airfield Amendment in it, and then that would be voted on as a separate enactment. Staff can easily break those into separate ordinances. The concern under the GMA is that the city must consider all of its proposed comprehensive plan amendments in a given year concurrently, so all of their collective impacts can be assessed properly in the aggregate, and as long as the the council's procedural time frame allows for that. There's no need to have the substantive amendments in different adopting ordinances or the same adopting ordinance.
So what we're saying tonight, the best is that we vote on this in total this evening because it's
if Councilmember Cuddeback's concern is not wanting to vote on that specific section, and the council is agreeable to that, the recommendation for me would be to segment one section out, the section dealing with the airport issue, and that would be in its own separate enactment you would then vote on. And since this is first reading, the council has a fairly substantial amount of latitude procedurally.
Yeah, I guess the question then would be whether or not she's Councilmember Cuddeback feel comfortable voting on it in its entirety, or at that time we'll have to separate that. So we'll ask her to rejoin. We'll have a conversation with regards to the other two items. And at the time. Second two items at the time of the motion, we'll have the discussion. All right. The second is North Kelso Development Plan, Downtown Master Plan.
We had discussion about this, and basically intent being to uncouple North Kelso Downtown from the comp plan and replace them with goals and policies for those, and that. This is a text amendment only. There's no land use, no management involved. I'd be happy to answer any specific questions.
Council, any questions? Wait, go ahead. Council Member Kevin?
I like your pen. Yeah. That wasn't my question. I mean, that was a statement. I just want to make sure that when I'm reading this, that even though, you know, there's language in there about auto-centric and other things, that there's still language in there about pedestrian-friendly and encouraging that type. And I do see it here, so it was under that Economic Development Goal 3, promote the incorporation of transit, bicycle, pedestrian access. So that is still in there, correct? All right. I just want to make sure. I had made comments last council meeting and a couple other times before. And even though people might drive to the area, I think we still have an opportunity to create access, pedestrian-friendly walkways, ways to make connections, still within that development, and development across the street. It's known that when you connect, when you provide those spaces for people, they will use it. And when people walk through a shopping area, they're more likely to meander, spend more time there, shop more. So we have an opportunity. We've talked about a medical building going there. That is an opportunity because if people are in there working and visiting a doctor, if there's pedestrian-friendly amenities around there, they will be able to walk out, go grab something to eat, see their children play, whatever. And I just think as a council, we need to make sure that those happen. So I just want to make sure. I mean, what I read here made it sound like it was still, you know, highlighted to be pedestrian-friendly and all of that. So if that's the case, then I don't have issues with taking it out of the comp plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember
Hamper. Yes, thank you, Councilmember Kodak. I completely agree with you. As we will be visiting those doctor's offices, and my wife will need places to walk and shop. So, thank you.
Councilmember, no, that's all I know. Questions? Any other questions or comments for Paul? Okay. All right, moving on to item C. Mr. Sachs.
This item C addresses the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment. We had a briefing at the last council meeting last Tuesday night, and had, I think, a pretty good conversation, and be happy to entertain any questions.
Councilmember Hamper.
Thank you. What is the timeline for the EIS, environmental impact study, to be done? And who would be responsible for that? You might have gone over that, but...
As far as the comprehensive plan amendment goes, the EIS has been completed. It is now a final EIS. That was completed by Brad Feilberg. He's our CEPA official. Is that the correct term? And so that process was advertised, and comment was taken, and the responses were made in the final document. So that is complete. Now, when you talk about a comprehensive EIS for the project development, that will all take place at the time of application for permit. So at that time, the EIS would be much more extensive because we talked about project impacts. So it would build on the draft or the phased final. Is it a final phase or final phase EIS? That document will be the basis for the project EIS that will take place during the permit process.
And it's paid for by the developer?
Yes.
Thank you. I need a job in clarifying that we are, as we consider this tonight, we are not the last straw before the buildings start going up. Thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you, Councilman Hanford. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't know if this is for Jeff or Brad, but it kind of plays on that. Could you just educate us on what the whole process for an EIS, you know, kind of walk us through that? I mean, I've heard a lot of different things as far as it should be more detailed, less detailed, it's not even required. You know, none of us are property developers up here, so what's the typical process that something like this would go through, and what have we done? I just would like to compare those two.
Go for it.
Okay. I'm not sure there is a typical for this kind of thing. It's the state law, which is the WAC 19711, is very broad in its scope and is basically very situational. It doesn't even have a definition of what significant is or adverse. So the usual process is when someone does something that requires environmental review, they fill out what's called an environmental checklist that is reviewed by the city, and a threshold determination is made. There's three choices when you do a threshold determination. You can have the determination's significance that an environmental impact statement is required. You can have a determination of non-significance, or you can do a mitigated determination of non-significance. Determination of non-significance says that there's not going to be any significant adverse environmental impact, and a mitigated determination of non-significance says if you do these things, there won't be any significant and adverse environmental impact. In this case, I reviewed the environmental checklist that was submitted, looking at the cumulative impacts of the progression of this project, and determined that it was a significant project. We sent out the scoping notice to receive public comment on what the scope of the environmental impact statement was going to be. I indicated that it was going to, I don't have the list in front of me, but surface water, groundwater, transportation, wetlands, habitat, things like that. After reviewing the scoping process, I determined that because of the limited nature of what was happening to this moment, you've heard it referred to as just changing the color of the map, no one's digging dirt or anything like that, that it would be a phased EIS, which sets the groundwork for future development that comes up, basically outlining the general impacts that could happen from changing this designation. And And as was pointed out in the public hearing on the EIS Planning Commission, 16 times in the document I said, this action will not have any environmental impacts, however, future development will. So, and that's basically why it's phased. Right now it's not doing anything, but something is coming. We need to look at wetlands, floodplain, steep slopes, traffic, those kind of things in the future as this develops. So, and that's where we're at. We've done that first part, and now it's set the stage for when someone does bring in a development project, they have the basis to start with and then continue on with the analysis for their specific impacts.
Is it even customary that as part of a comp plan amendment to do an EIS or a phased EIS, or what's the policy?
Once again, it's situational, depending on what the actual future impacts could be. Probably, looking at the record we've done, probably 85% of the ones that the city has done in the past have been determinations of non-significance, much like the North Kelsey downtown was a determination of non-significance. Airport was a determination of significance. So, and in the past, it's probably about 85% have been determinations of non-significance, with the 15% being determinations of significance.
Okay, so if I understand, I'm going to paraphrase what you said. Just tell me if I got it. The city has started the process of the EIS to identify that there are issues and identify what those issues are going to be, that if and when a development would come in there, they are going to have to do full-blown EISs for each of those issues, traffic, water, etc.
Correct.
Councilmember Pettibat.
Thank you. I'm just going to kind of go through a couple things of issues that I have looked at this whole project. First is, and I might, there might be a question in here. I'm just trying to work through the project. We state when there's a comprehensive plan amendment that each plan amendment will, and it lists a criteria, shall not adversely affect public health safety, shall be consistent with the overall goals and intent of a comprehensive plan. That's one of the criteria we look at whether to approve a comp plan amendment. And in your findings and conclusions, it states down below on section B, the comp plan amendment is inconsistent with the overall goals and intent of the comprehensive plan as currently described. So it kind of begs the question that this comp plan amendment as presented is not consistent with the overall goals and intent of the comp plan. So it's backwards in my mind. We're looking at a comp plan amendment that is not consistent with the goals and intent of the comp plan, while the other two are. So I know that at Planning Commission last Monday, they were presented with substantial changes to the land use element text on Friday. If I'm looking at this right, that wasn't the original issue that was brought forward. It was to change limited open space to general commercial, not make all those substantial changes to the land use element. That was presented on Friday. A public hearing was presented at the Planning Commission on Monday. In my mind, that's not adequate time for public, input, and for the Planning Commission to have enough time and input to look at those substantial changes to the land use elements. I feel like there is a lack of public process around that issue. We're making substantial changes to the comp plan when that was not the original intent. So that's my biggest issue with this is, there needs to be more time if we're making those substantial. It seems like, as I said last week, we're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. We're changing the comp plan to fit this project, instead of looking at the project and going, does this amendment still fit the overall goals of the comp plan? To me, that's backwards. The second issue I have with the amendment is the EIS. And I talked about this a little bit last week. But in my opinion, an EIS is supposed to reasonably foresee the actions. There needs to be some analysis in the EIS. And there's not an adequate amount of analysis in that in the EIS for me to make a decision on to make this major change. There's not adequate analysis. You know, I keep hearing we're just changing the color of a map. The colors on the map mean something. They mean something, or they wouldn't have different colors. There's a significance to those colors. And you need to know the impacts, what that change will happen, to know if it's even a good idea to change that color. And with the EIS that's presented, there's not enough analysis to know if the change is a good change. I went through all the material on the website. Thank you, Brad, for showing me where that was. And I just want to read a couple comments that were there that, you know, people have concern about the EIS. At the Planning Commission meeting, Commissioner Christensen made a comment of, it was mentioned earlier through citizen comment, the wording of this document, that basically the land use change doesn't really have an impact, but yet the final objective does, and I guess somewhat paraphrasing what others have said tonight, but that is a concern for me. Obviously, we wouldn't redesignate an area to be commercial and then not rezone it. We have to rezone it. Comply, it has to. The zoning will have to change, and once that does, someone could come in and do their best to build some commercial development on here. And I think that this document needs to seriously take that into account. Some other issues about the EIS were from the Department of Ecology, and they stated in there that the wetland and shoreline information is outdated and incomplete, and they believe these sections should be updated with current wetland delineations and determination of shoreline extent in the project area. They also say that if a applicable buffer on this wetland would be increased from 75 to 100 feet, potentially affecting the area for development. And that the DPEIS doesn't contain any areas within, that it doesn't have any analysis on shoreline. And then some people have comments about originally a determination of significance was given, and then in the draft EIS, it's saying that, you know, there's not any issues until development happens, but there was a determination of significance, that there would be significant impact. And then there's no analysis on what that impact would be. So those are concerns I have with the EIS. A couple other things that were mentioned were, you know, the property right discussion. And I don't see that as a compelling argument. And the reason being is we have zoning. We tell people what they can do with their property. It happens all the time. It's important to have that for the planning of a city. I mean, we regulate where a strip club can go. We regulate possibly where other things can go, other uses. So, you know, having property doesn't mean that you can do whatever you want with that property. It is within reason. So I don't think that the property right discussion is a good argument to make this change. The last argument of the gateway discussion, you know, I think that the gateway concept in theory is a great theory. Boy, if you could really put it in play, but the only way I foresee that you can do that, for a city to do that, is if we own all four corners as you enter in, and we make that happen, and we don't, and nor are we likely to do that. Where we can control the gateway is streetscapes, you know, sidewalks, bike paths, trees, signage. That's how we can control the look and feel of our city when we enter into it. We can work with development and encourage them to have a specific use on there. If it's zone general commercial, get McDonald's on there coming in from the east, gas station. You know, and so I while I like the concept of the gateway, I can't see that as another a compelling argument to approve this. And I definitely can't support a first draft of an ordinance tonight when the land use element changes were given the Friday before Planning Commission on Monday. To me, that process seems too rushed. And, I don't think it fits the timeline of what needs to happen when you're making those substantial changes. That's all I have right now.
Mr. Sachs?
Just some comments. Number one, comp plan change is non-project action, as defined under state law. So it doesn't require the extensive EIS that a lot of people have asked for. The EIS is also non-germane. Well, it's formative to this conversation tonight. It's not part of this action tonight. The EIS process is closed. The public was allowed to comment on the process. The final has been presented. We are now waiting for that EIS to season itself and to allow the council to take action, final action. And that will take place much well in advance of the 60-day commerce review. Zoning is going to take place at the same time as the comprehensive plan change. That zoning conversation will be working its way through the Planning Commission process and to council, and will arrive for a final decision tentatively scheduled for July 10th. So that process is in play. You discussed police powers, zoning, and there's an inconsistency, I think, in that zoning is the city's police power, and it is within the power, the legislative authority of the council to zone. Gateway zoning is allowed within that. While that's not germane to the conversation tonight, we didn't get the gateway zoning put together. We did talk about it in the comprehensive plan, and that discussion in the text addressing gateway will inform staff and inform the zoning code to start working towards a gateway zone. We have property rights involved, and we historically there's been mistrust of the property owner, and the city doesn't trust the property owner. And in this case, we have a property owner that perhaps doesn't completely trust the city. It's a situation where you're being asked to redesignate property to general commercial and rezone it to general commercial. And the property owner has said, we have interest in providing for a quality development. They've also expressed interest in supporting a gateway designation or a gateway zone and work with the city through that process. So, again, that's a decision you have to accept. It's a finding that you can accept or not accept in trusting the property owner. In the end, this is a legislative decision, and council is having this conversation tonight, and it's very appropriate to have these conversations about different aspects of the plan as it relates to the goals under GMA. And you can waive all 14 goals. You don't have to use any goal in priority over another priority. In this case, staff has recommended changes to the comprehensive plan to bring the plan into consistency should council approve the redesignation. And I think that's right and appropriate to do that. I guess those are my comments on that. I'm not having a question, I tried to not provide an answer. So
I appreciate that. There wasn't a question in there, more just statements. I agree. Just a couple comments about your comments. You know, I don't look at the issue of the trust or distrust between us and the property owner. To me, that isn't a factor in our decision. It really is about process. The property owner, who they are, whether they trust or distrust, to me, that's not a factor in my decision. And the other comment about the gateway designation and adding that language into the comp plan, the only thing I can say about that is it sounds like a great idea, and I know you're an idea man, but there's been no vetting about it. It's been an internal staff discussion. We haven't even discussed it at length at council. It's been mentioned a couple times, and now a phrase in the comp plan. To me, that's not enough. That's not enough discussion. We might not even really truly understand what a gateway plan looks like. An analysis of one. Where's an example of where it worked? What does it look like? What are some of the things we would put on a property owner? So, you know, while again, I like the concept, there's been no work around it. And having an internal staff discussion and then sticking it into the comp plan, to me, is not enough process. So those are just some comments regarding some of your comments. Thank you.
Councilor Williams.
Are you, just a question. Are you proposing to strike that language from this comp plan amendment of the gateway concept?
I'm not. I would propose not to have this amendment. But I'm waiting for further discussion.
Floor.
That was my question. I wasn't understanding where you were going with that, so that I just want some clarification.
Well, one of a clarifying comment might be that I've heard it mentioned about the gateway concept, and I don't think it can be, in my opinion, I can't use that I like the idea of a gateway concept as evidence or you know, something that helps me approve this amendment, because I see that as a separate issue that needs to be dealt with separately with the whole gateway, and it's not part, in my mind, of approving or not approving this amendment.
Okay. Yeah, to me, when I read this stuff about the gateway, talked about that we would want a gateway presence. It didn't really specify zoning or any, it didn't specify specifics about that. You know, as I'm looking through the changes, again, there's the changes that I see in here do not look overly dramatic to me. And so I'm more interested to hear if there are specific things that someone has concerns about on what's in front of us.
Thank you. Just a couple comments. One with regard to gateway. The way that I read it is to be describing what could happen. I think we're certainly set up for a discussion later on that and an official incorporation. But the mention of it here is certainly harmless. With regard to the amount of time to read it, you know, the decision lies with us, you know, as the council. And I mean, I've certainly been over this again. The action for tonight is a first reading, which is going to give us additional time to look over this, you know, again before anything's official. So, from a time frame standpoint, I think there's more than enough time to read through these. Again, Planning Commission, they are an advisory board, and some felt that they had enough time, others didn't. I was at that meeting. I did listen to the discussion that night, so I don't have a concern with the text that I see, at least the timing surrounding the text. With regard to the piece of property itself, quite frankly, I think this could be could be quite lucrative for the city from a commercial standpoint. This is a piece of property on Highway 2, and that kind of property is hard to get. Certainly something this big along Highway 2, I think of all the benefits that could happen here, and I think makes a lot of sense to do something like this. I have no problem changing the color of the map from a commercial standpoint. standpoint, it's an inconsistent to have 5 acres of open space on a park inside the city limits. That's more inconsistent, I think, than the other things that have been considered with regard to being consistent or not. Again, the concerns of the residents, those take it seriously, and each one of those is going to need to be dealt with, but not as part of this action, as I understand it. That's all at a project level, where everything that's been brought up has to be dealt with. And I think Councilman Williams asked that question earlier with regard to the EIS. Each one of those things has to be dealt with and mitigated. That's not a concern for me there with regard to this. It really is changing the color on the map. I understand that there's a potential zoning change that comes after that. That's pretty standard. Two more. Property rights is a big deal, is a very big deal, and has everything to do with this. I think that as government, the last thing I want government to be doing is picking and choosing and telling me what I can do. That's not what government, in my opinion, is supposed to be doing. I couldn't disagree more with respect to your previous comments. We want to reduce the impact of government on people, not increase the impact of government on people, and telling someone what they can and can't do within a legal designation, I think, is not our role, and certainly not something we want to get into. And finally, politics, unfortunately, has played a role in this. I've been here long enough to see different members of the of planning staff hearing different members of the community, serve with different council members, and I can absolutely say with certainty that politics has played a role in denying this before, and I think that's wrong. So, again, those are my comments for now, and I look forward to taking some final action on this. Thank you.
City Administrator Brad.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to remind Council again that this is just the first reading this evening. We've got a lot of time to review this. We can bring it back if substantive changes are proposed and made, then we would have to have another public hearing to go over that. But again, it's just a first reading this evening.
Councilmember Tedeback.
Thank you. To make a comment on the first reading of the ordinance, I understand that. I know that July is kind of, it's a few months away. But in my mind, that sends a message that we've approved this reading without what I think is adequate process with those substantial changes in the land use element, the text changes. Because what that says is we're approving this and then we might hold a public hearing after. In my mind, the public hearing needs to be held first before I can approve or not approve this. I would like to hear those comments around those specific land use text changes before I approve an ordinance. To me, that is backwards, to approve this ordinance now without having that opportunity. So that's where I have I get it's a first ordinance, but I don't, in good conscience, I can't approve the first ordinance when we haven't gone through what I think is the necessary process. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments, Cecilia?
I think Jeff had a comment.
The public hearing has been delegated to the Planning Commission. The Council and the Planning Commission work in cooperation through this process. Council has the option to hold another public hearing. That's part of the process. It could be re-noticed, and the second reading could be your second public hearing. That would probably provide a notice. If substantial changes were made at that time, that runs into additional delays, but it is your discretion that, according to city resolution on comprehensive planning, comp plan amendments are, one public hearing is held, and that public hearing is required, and that public hearing has been held by the Planning Commission. So, just a minute. Mm-hmm.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I'm still looking at this as the document in front of us is the comp plan amendment, and looking at the edited text, and I mean, this is a long document. A lot of it's, it doesn't pertain to East Monroe. A lot of it's really boring technical stuff. But with the red lines that we were given, the highlights of what changed, to me, I look at this as it's a standalone document, and I got to look at what's in front of me and decide if those things make sense or not. What's being presented, and to me, when I read the changes, and there's not a lot of changes, you know, overall as I'm reading this, there's nothing that strikes me as wrong or inconsistent. That doesn't have anything to do with if and when something ever comes before us that we have to vote on, or a development comes in, or somebody wants to do something with it. That's a whole other discussion that, you know, hopefully that will happen long after I'm gone. But I got to look at the document in front of me, and I've yet to see anything specific point in the document that jumps out as inconsistent or something that I don't support. I understand all the issues that have been presented by staff, by planning commissioners, by people that live in the area, and they have more to do with the development that's a potential to go in there than this particular document. That's a discussion, in my mind, that's a discussion for later on, not this document tonight. So
thank you. Just to respond to that, in my mind, what we're doing is we're changing the comp plan to fit the project. And to me, that's not the process that we should be following when you look at the criteria of whether to go forward with a comp plan amendment. It says clearly right here, the comp plan amendment shall be consistent with the overall goals and intent of the comprehensive plan. Then further down under the findings and conclusions from the staff, it says the comprehensive plan amendment is inconsistent with the overall goals and intent of the comp plan. So now what we're doing is we're changing, it's brought forward to change the comp plan so that it fits the amendment, versus the other amendments still fit the goals and policies of the comp plan, and the amendment fits in with those. This was presented on Friday before a public hearing on Monday. That's a substantial change that was given Friday for a public hearing on Monday. To me, that's not enough process when you're making this substantial change to the land use element text. And to me, that's it's not enough process.
I understand your point.
You do?
Okay. You'd say agree.
Yeah, no, I got that. I understood that. That's why I keep repeating it. You know, it's like the EIS. If I keep repeating it in there, I'm thinking it's going to fall away.
Like your child. Keep repeating. Please. No, I'm sorry. Not there.
No, that's okay.
Okay. Any other comments or questions for staff with regards to item C? Recommended action tonight is a motion to accept as first reading an ordinance regarding the 2012 comprehensive plan amendments, amending the land use element and land use designations based on the findings and conclusions as shown in attachment one. Councilmember Gearing?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Hanford to accept as first reading an ordinance regarding 2012 comprehensive plan amendments, amending the land use element and land use designations based on the findings and conclusions shown in attachment one. Councilmember Cutterback?
Can we split those out of the ordinance? Can we take them piece by piece, or do we have to take the whole ordinance?
It is appropriate if the council prefers to segment out the individual sections and vote on them individually as standalone ordinances, but that would obviously be a modification of the proposal before the council right now. So if that's the council's preference, the action would be to move to amend the standing motion to effectuate that.
I'll make a motion to amend and see if there's a second, because I would like those pulled out.
And what's your specific, state your specific amendment, please.
Is it for every single one? Rather than all addressed as separate ordinances? Because that's certainly been the council's prerogative.
If we can amend to pull out the East Monroe, the others can stay in together.
Yes. So the motion will be to amend the main motion to omit the proposal concerning the East Monroe comprehensive plan changes, and to place those in a new enactment.
Yeah, actually, actually, we need to pull out all three, so that I'm not going to vote on the first air. So if I could make a motion to amend the motion to pull out all three separately.
Is that a friendly amendment?
Yes.
And I mean, I can accept that as long as I get the explanation of how. Do we need, is it a different ordinance number than for all three, or is it just...
Again, Council, how do we do that? Since then, this is the first reading, this is more informed than we actually get around to adopting, you know, the changes that are being proposed. So, to answer your question, yes, you'd be voting on individual sections of this ordinance as individual sections, with the direction to staff then to come back and bring back new ordinances that just contain one or two or however many provisions the council would like to have in each one.
And that's your friendly amendment?
Yes.
And then I accept the friendly amendment.
Second. What's that?
Again, council, the legal concern is that they're all considered concurrently, and I don't believe there's any suggestion that I'm hearing from the council that would not occur.
The friendly amendment that's been accepted by the maker of the motion is the seconder of the motion also accept.
Yes.
All right. So the reality is that you probably, here my recommendation, and certain attorney made, is to rescind all motions entirely and to resubmit a motion on the separate. That's what you've done, is you've just separated them.
And direction to staff would be to come back and have a separate adopting ordinance for each of the proposals.
As the second and final.
Correct.
That's for tonight.
Well, no, I believe that the motion right now is to amend. That's my understanding of Council Member Cutback's motion to amend. That's the thrust of it.
Yeah, so I guess my point is that since the friendly amendment has been asked to say let's separate all of it, why don't we just rescind the first motion entirely, friendly amendment, first motion entirely, and then just make a motion based on all three portions so that Councilmember Ketabak can recuse herself from the one and vote no on the other.
So withdrawal approaches.
We know. Come on now.
You put words in my mouth.
So you withdraw the friendly amendment?
Yes.
And I would withdraw the motion?
Yes, I withdraw the motion.
Okay. All right. So then, City Attorney Lowell, how would you recommend a motion for, let's do item number B right now, since
we'll do all Kelsey first. There we go. Sounds good.
And just to clarify, Council, it doesn't need to be an adopting motion, but my understanding is that you would still be intending to adopt the substance as it's been presented for each of these individual enactments, and the findings and conclusions that you're going to be adopting or making part of it by reference. So my recommendation would be first to have a motion for first reading and adoption containing the substance of Section 1 of the ordinance that's before you tonight, with the direction for staff to come to prepare a separate adopting ordinance for second reading and adoption.
Let's start with C, work our way back.
I'm sorry?
You can go with one.
One is first air. Okay.
Yes.
Then, okay, we'll move forward with that and just show the record, show that Councilmember Cutback has recused herself from the motion or here it is, left the chambers. Motion has been made by Councilmember Geary. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second has been made by Councilmember Hammer, as read by City Attorney. Okay, any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Motion would be to move to have first reading of the substance of Section 2 of the ordinance before council tonight, again with direction to staff to bring that back under a separate adopting ordinance.
So moved.
Second.
by Councilmember Gary and seconded by Councilmember Hanford. Any other further discussion or comment? Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say turn it off.
And the next motion would be to repeat the exercise to move the council adopt the substance of Section 3 of the ordinance before you tonight as a standalone ordinance with direction to staff to bring back an adopting ordinance to that effect.
So moved.
Second.
A motion has been made by Councilmember Hanford, made by Councilmember Garrigan, seconded by Councilmember Hanford. Any other questions, comments? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passed 5-1 with Councilmember Cuddeback in opposition. All right. Very good.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Sachs.
It, just clarification, we will be forwarding these recommendations to Commerce at this point and the implementing ordinances. Do we need to have those implementing ordinances separated and sent individually to Commerce?
My recommendation and practice is to always do that, but I also know from experience that Commerce is much more concerned about the substance of the proposed enactments and much less concerned about the form of the adopting ordinance. And if I can make one final point, Mr. Mayor, I don't believe that Section 4 of this adopting ordinance has yet been voted on for Council. Is it your intent to bring that back also as a separate enactment? This is also a substantive section enacting various additional text amendments.
Yes.
Yes. There.
So the suggested motion?
Yes, the suggested motion would be in the same form as the first three, and that is for the council to move to adopt the substance of Section 4 of the proposed ordinance before you tonight. Again, with direction to staff to bring back a form of adopting ordinance for your second reading adoption at a future meeting.
Anybody?
So moved. I mean, I'm going to do it a little bit.
Sir. A motion has been made by Councilmember Gary and seconded by Councilmember Camp. Any further comments or questions? All right. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right, thank you very much. Okay. Good discussion, great dialogue. Thank you very much, Council. All right, we'll move on then to the next portion of the agenda. That's Council Member Reports. Council Member Geary?
No reports at this time.
Council Member Cutter?
No, thank you.
Council Member Williams?
No.
Council Member Camp?
I do. Yes. I would like Council to consider initiate a student representative to Monroe City Council from Monroe High School. I was fortunate to be able to contact the principal of Monroe High School. We had a long discussion about it, and I put together a few notes on what I would like to see and used his input. I also talked to the mayor and the city administrator about ways we can incorporate these people. I think it would be a great opportunity.
So what you have here tonight is an outline of a student representative program to have a high school student representative attend council meetings and also work with staff.
Yes. Again, from discussion, I'm thinking in terms of a rotation to departments and the possibility, again, depending on staff time, putting together, preparing a report and presenting it to council during study sessions. They're doing a similar program in Sultan Council. The last 3 years has been very successful. And Principal Lombardi is very excited about this. He thinks it's a good idea as well. And other people in the city have supported it.
When we had the conversation, it was very fitting, the timing of that, for right about that very time we had an applicant for one of the boards. It was a student, 14-year-old student. City Administrator Frazzle and I had conducted participated in the dialogue, and it was refreshing to see the interest level that, she had in her community and in local government. And right about that time, you had approached me, and so I thought it was very fitting that we had student reach out in hopes to engage. Here we have a little more defined program in order to provide them with a platform and the opportunity to do that. So the question tonight, Councilmember Camp, then is, or the direction that you would like to see is to have staff create some guidelines or create a program or be open to this. Really, a lot of the work is going to happen up at the high school with regards to how they choose the students.
Actually, Principal Lombardi was very helpful in describing. I believe the YMCA has a similar program with their board. We could, I believe it can be handled very easily up there. Yes, having, as you mentioned, having staff or directing staff to work on this, if council believes it would be a good idea.
Yeah, I thought it was very appropriate. Well, but wanted to be sure that council was supportive of allowing for students to come to City Hall to discuss. Councilmember Cutter.
Yeah, I was just going to lend support to it. I think it's a great idea. One comment would be make sure it's open to any, you know, leaders in learning. We have a lot of other alternatives besides Monroe High School, so just making sure that option is open to the school district.
Which you do want to reach out to them? Well, Monroe High School is the large building on the hill.
Yeah, the school district would be very helpful in that, but just making sure it's open to, because there's a lot of options for older students, but maybe it's more of a, either I think you put junior or senior, submit an application and kind of, but they're in the Monroe School District.
That was suggestion of Principal Lombardi is that we have it at the junior and senior level for various reasons.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. Thank you for bringing it.
And I think we had talked about the width of this program and spoke of the high school specifically for now as a way of you know, kind of a trial run at this point. So this certainly could grow into something much, much larger.
The program at Sultan's, if I understand correctly, is just they present, as I believe study sessions, no votes. They do not have a rotation process through the departments. They just attend the council meetings and provide input from the school. But that's why I wanted to add for consideration the rotation process of having them. The thought of working with the financial department and preparing a mid-year report, when I was fortunate enough during my first time on council, I had the opportunity to interview various people at the department head, and it was such an enlightening experience to really understand how city work. I just thought it would be great as well.
Councilmember Gary?
Thanks. Absolutely in support of this. Maybe we put it on the agenda so we can fully, we can hash out some more. Yeah, and just study session and hash it out. And that was my suggestion. Thank you.
Councilmember Ham?
I echo those comments. Very generous.
So I appreciate the suggestion that we place this on a study session, a future date, would then extend an invitation to Councilmember Camp to visit again with City Administrator Brazel, myself, and the department head, kind of define the program a little more prior to bringing it back to council for support.
Thank you.
We'll do that. Let's do that before we actually set a date on the agenda. Knowing that school's almost out here in less than, you know, and maybe this is a program that happens next year.
Actually, that was pointed out by Principal Lombardi as well. He said there are students who can't get enough of school and will be there all summer. So the information can get out there if we decide to do this program this year.
Okay.
Take for variance.
We'll meet soon.
Great.
Thank you for that idea. Thanks for bringing it. Councilmember Davis?
I have nothing.
Councilmember Hamper?
Yeah, I wanted to report that we were at the July Saturday for the Healthy Kids Day, and got the very tail end of it, so we didn't get to enjoy the entire benefits or anything, but it was a great time there. Appreciate the line and everything they do in our community.
Staff, anything further to report? Jeff? Ed? Chief? Ann?
This Saturday is the spring cleanup in the high school. Please come out, drop off your trash for free, and then support the girls' basketball team by buying some barbecue.
Come on.
I live in Stonebridge, but I bring my trash.
But you can buy barbecue. Brad? Me first or you first? Over the weekend, I had the opportunity to help host and MC the economic forum expo out at the recreational expo. Let me just be frank, and that is that typically these types of expos are kind of a yawn for me. However, Ted Jackson, as well as Mayor Carolyn Essler from Sullivan, did a fantastic job at putting together panel members who were enthusiastic, informative, creative. It was really a phenomenal panel. A group of panelists that spoke on Saturday. So, for those of you who are unable to make the expo, missed out. The gist of the expo is related to developing IPZs, innovation partnership zones, around a specific industry or technology. And in our case, in East Snohomish County, from the port to the pass, we're looking at developing businesses that support recreation and specifically manufacturing development, as well as recreation opportunities as well. We had members from the Department of Commerce, from the Forestry Service, from DNR, the list I should have brought. It really was packed full of some really good information, and just the discussion itself over the last year, I think, has led to a lot of support and interest in not only the East Snohomish County corridor, but in Monroe as well. And we've seen some specific action that is very supportive of the IPZ here. IPZs, I think there are 12, I can't remember the exact number, I'll say 12 for now, throughout all of the state of Washington. The governor is committed to helping to develop those zones, technology zones, medical zones, things like that. I guess, thinking back, the greatest example of an IPZ is Silicon Valley. Even though they didn't know what they were doing, they created a zone in which technology and so forth helped to really develop an economic center unlike anything else in the world, quite frankly. So I don't know that we'll get that big, but we're certainly moving along those lines. I will say that we're hoping to announce shortly that we have a company who shall be closing on a facility here in Monroe in the Providence Industrial section. The potential is as many as 350 jobs here in Monroe. They're very enthusiastic about this IPZ. Without giving away exactly what they do, when you think of recreation, you think of healthy lifestyles. So with that said, this company will help supplement that lifestyle and supplement the IPZ. So it's very exciting to see what's happening. We were one up on Council Mayor Hensley. They are looking at rebranding, and their brand is the adventure starts here, or the gateway to adventure. The gateway to adventure. So I had to joke with her and say that, well, the gateway to adventure starts here. And we've already branded that. However, I did suggest that she may use the adventure continues, and she liked that. So I trademarked that. Really a great meeting. Very enthusiastic about the information that was proposed, the support that we have, not only in the industry, but the support that we have within the state state departments as well. Lastly, the barbecue competition took place with the winners announced on Sunday. And if you were with anywhere in a nose distance or smelling distance from the fairgrounds, you know that it was a complete success. We had some phenomenal competitors, and Brian and Nancy Lipsy, who helped to coordinate that event, did a fantastic job. My hat goes off to them. And it was loads of fun being the MC for that as well, to be able to present the winners with the awards that they had. That's what happened over the weekend as well. Lastly, the fishing derby was there on Sunday morning also, and that was a huge success. And then got four, right?
One, the kids did.
Yeah, that's right.
Four.
So it was packed weekend.
They'll be fine for a meal.
We'll be hearing more about the IPZ as it did this for. Just wanted to get City Minister Breslin.
Thank you. I just want to let everybody know that there is a girls basketball tournament, the Cinco de Mayo tournament this weekend. It's going to be hosted at Monroe High School, and Monroe is partnering in that as well. The draft agenda for May 8th, 2012. Under announcements and presentations, we have the swearing-in ceremony for Deputy Chief Bernard and the K-9 Officer Jeff. Under final action, we have a resolution, notice of intent, Shell Ridge annexation. We have four study session topics. Number one is presentation of 6-year transportation improvement program. Number two is council review of the sign code amendments. Number three is department reports. Number four is the draft agenda for May 15th, 2012. Any additions or deletions?
Yeah, the council I can't say.
Yeah, we'll meet first. Between staff and Councilor Camp and possibly the high school, kind of put some parameters around the program.
Farther down the road.
Yeah.
Sure. Got it.
All right. Bring some suggestions and get it back to council for consideration. But we'll make that happen.
The sign code amendment, I forgot to delete that. That's not going to be presented next week.
Okay. We do have the need for an executive session this evening, and Attorney Lowell.
Mr. Mayor, pursuant to RCW 4-1-1-I, the executive session is to assess tenant litigation of legal counsel. The executive session lasts approximately 5 minutes, and counsel may take action on the session when we convene.
Okay. With that said, then, we will go into an executive session for approximately 5 minutes. Counsel may take action. We are back in session. Councilmember Gehring?
Motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Gehring, seconded by Councilmember Camp. Adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, we are adjourned.